All right, well, good morning. We can go ahead and get started. Thank you so much for attending the 2011 annual forum of the ASPH Pfizer Public Health Academy of Distinguished Teachers. For those of you who haven't met me yet, I'm Rachel Eisenstein, and I work with ASPH, and I'll be the moderator for today's session. I'd like to go ahead and introduce our distinguished speakers for today's session. Marie Diener-West is the inaugural Helen Abbey and Margaret Merrill Professor of Biostatistics Education and the Chair of the Master of Public Health Program at the Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health. Her education includes a PhD in biostatistics in 1984 from the Johns Hopkins University, and her research has focused in the area of multi-center clinical trials. Professor Diener-West has taught and mentored numerous master's and doctoral students and postdoctoral fellows. Since 1990, she has been one of the lead instructors for the Introductory Statistical Methods course sequence for graduate students at the Bloomberg School of Public Health and co-developed the school's first online course in quantitative methods. She has been a recipient of the student-nominated Golden Apple Award for Excellence in Teaching, as well as the faculty-nominated Stebbins Medal in recognition of contributions to the teaching programs at Johns Hopkins. She was also the recipient of the Statistics Section Award for Academic Statistics given by the American Public Health Association in 2003. In 2006, she became a fellow of the American Statistical Association for Innovation and Excellence in Biostatistics Education of Health Scientists and Professionals and for Leadership in Statistical Applications in Clinical Research. In addition, we have Kay Bartholomew. She is an Associate Professor of Health Promotion and Behavioral Sciences and Associate Dean for Academic Affairs at the University of Texas School of Public Health. Kay received her MPH from the University of Texas School of Public Health and a Doctor of Education in Educational Psychology from the University of Houston College of Education. Dr. Bartholomew's research interest is in the self-management of chronic diseases. She has won the Society for Public Health Education Program Excellence Award for the Cystic Fibrosis Family Education Program, as well as numerous other professional association and media awards. She is a fellow of the ASPH Pfizer Public Health Academy of Distinguished Teachers and is the 2009 President's Scholar for Teaching at the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. In her spare time, Kay is a gardener and a mystery novel aficionado. She recently began expansion of her gardening into an acre of fruits and vegetables. I'd now like to turn it over to Dr. Diener-West.
Well, thank you very much, Rachel. So it's really exciting to be here today and to focus on a session that's entitled Roles and Opportunities for Teaching Assistants. So the objectives of today are to try to identify and possibly revisit, as we have before, the challenges associated with teaching large public health courses, to demonstrate and give some examples or suggestions of ways to effectively train teaching assistants, and then to describe what might be innovations or at least new ways of looking at the roles of teaching assistants in both on-site and online learning. And so the way this this session is scheduled is that both Dr. Bartholomew and I will give presentations, and then we're hoping to open it up for plenty of time for discussion. So in terms of my session, I'll plan to focus on enhancing what we might call the traditional teaching assistant role through training of teaching assistants. And we all know that there are challenges in teaching public health courses as opposed to different types of courses. And we've heard before about the issue of having multiple generations in the same classroom. So Dr. Lisa Sullivan talked about some of the potential problems as well as solutions at the ASPH Academy Forum in 2009. But we also know that there's quite a lot of heterogeneity of student backgrounds. They come with different disciplines, different academic training, and different experience and desires for the future. And as well, we know that there's heterogeneity of student learning styles in addition to student expectations. So these are difficult questions, but there have been some solutions posed in the past and ways of trying to address these challenges. So one way is through addressing the student in the classroom, the way that they learn, introducing active learning and ways of of actually having hands-on experiences in which students may work together on group work or group projects. And often this might focus on the learning that goes on outside of the classroom in addition to within the classroom. There are hybrid approaches in which there may be a combination of online, internet-based modules, as well as on-site learning. But I think that one area that hasn't been focused on or addressed enough in the past has been the role of teaching assistants and the training of teaching assistants and the importance that they might have both with one-on-one interactions as well as small group interactions. So although we could spend hours talking about these ways to address these different challenges, today we'll talk about training of teaching assistants as well as training of junior faculty and other less experienced faculty members. So I know at Johns Hopkins, as well as most of your schools, you're faced with this question of how does a teaching assistant learn to be a teacher? We spend a lot of our time, you know, giving knowledge to students. They work on projects, they work on theses and dissertations, but they don't take courses typically in learning how to become a good teacher. So what do? They learn from their past experiences as a student. They think they reflect on what impressed them in terms of their former teachers and teaching assistants. I think that they observe when they become a teaching assistant, they observe other TAs and faculty instructors to see the practices that they employ. I think there's a little bit of trial and error that goes on in terms of hit or miss approaches. Sometimes you hit it perfectly, other times you might miss the target. But I don't think it's necessarily the norm that there are courses and structured training for teaching assistants. And so I think that's why we're all here today, to talk about this and learn from each other. So what I'd like to do is give a couple of examples of courses that I've been involved with in which we've tried to include teaching assistants in more novel ways. And so one of these courses is a biostatistics course. It's called Statistical Methods in Public Health. It's a required course sequence for many master's and doctoral students in our school, and it is an elective course for a variety of postdoctoral fellows, residents, faculty that are across the street for us at the School of Medicine. But it's a total of 500 students, and the course components that we have are lectures twice a week, a smaller group session where there's a review of a lab exercise, but then as well, many opportunities for having optional TA office hours for more individual interactions, as well as optional computing office hours, and then separate sessions for review of material before examinations. So I know you're all thinking this is an awfully big number of students, and it is. It takes a village to do this course. So what it takes are, we have, because we know that students do want to feel that they are in a lecture hall with a lecturer, we have two simultaneous lecture sections in which there are two faculty teaching the identical material at the same time to different groups of students. These lectures are audio taped and then posted on our course website so that students actually can re-listen to the lectures. As well, they can re-listen to the lectures of the other lecturer, so that there's a cross-breeding in that respect. We consider this one whole course of two different faculty lecturers, lab instructors, and graduate student TAs that comprise these 500 students. And then as well, we got worried last year with thinking that we might not have enough seats for every student, so we decided to employ an optional overflow room. We didn't need it. We had enough seats, but this was a safety measure. And what we find is that actually some students like the optional overflow room. They can spread out, they can have their coffee and their muffins in the morning. And so we've continued doing this, and it has audio video streaming. But then in addition, each of the students go to smaller groups of 35 to 50 students in which there's a lab session that's given by a lab instructor. But the lab instructors consist of the same two faculty members as well as two lead teaching assistants who rotate through these labs. So the students attend just one and a half hour lab session per week, and then they can go to the TA office hours, which are optional, that are manned by 13 or 14 graduate students. So it's a large operation. It does take a village to do this course. We have a website in which we acknowledge the lab instructors, the teaching assistants. All of the material is posted there. I'll come back to share with you one of our strategies. But the roles, then, of the teaching assistant are multifaceted in this course. We have two different levels, the lead teaching assistants who also act as lab instructors, and their roles are to actually conduct the lab sessions. They beta test the quizzes and exams that we develop, and they may give an occasional lecture, especially if one of the faculty members has a conflict. On the other hand, the teaching assistants are the ones who do the traditional things. So they grade problem sets and quizzes. They handle one-on-one questions in a very small group setting. Sometimes if there are 5 or 10 students, they'll go to the board and handle those 10 students together. But it's the more traditional type of TA role. And as well, they're sometimes available for possible tutoring. So I bring this up because we have this army of teaching assistants, and they're fairly diverse. You can see by looking at them, they're fairly diverse in terms of cultures. We, as all the other schools of public health, still have about 2/3 female and 1/3 male, but you can see they are diverse in culture. They're diverse as well in terms of their backgrounds. So in days gone by, we would have biostatistics graduate students as the teaching assistants. What we learned was that actually, by bringing in graduate students who were from other departments across the school who had taken this course, it actually reached to further students and sometimes allowed students with different backgrounds to reach existing students in our courses in a better way. So this is our teaching assistant crew. And in terms of the lab instructors, myself and Dr. Karen Bandine Roach are the faculty lecturers, and we have two lead teaching assistants. They happen to be female this year, who are senior doctoral students in biostatistics who assist us in the laboratory sessions. So what we feel that what is unique about this is that these lab instructors are following what we consider to be an apprentice model. So they are senior graduate students who have already served as TAs in these particular courses. They've observed faculty in the lab setting. We have them observe the faculty, review a lab in that setting, and then they conduct their own labs. We do give them observation. They have a structured exercise and a structured answer key, but it allows them then to gain this experience of giving small lectures to 20 to 30 students. They get more experience presenting in front of a group. They learn classroom strategies, and it allows them to take more major responsibilities than what they had as the typical TA in holding office hours. So in this model, we also try to foster the teaching team framework. So we have twice monthly full meetings of all of the faculty, the TAs, and the lab instructors who are involved in the course. We all gather around the same table to grade the examination. So we have grading parties in terms of faculty and TAs alike grade them, and we talk about, you know, issues that might come up. We also have two features that I find very helpful and that I'll describe in more detail. One is an online TA log, and the other is a TA training day. So the TA log looks like this. It just looks like a blog. But what it is that the TA will comment and say, you know, what students were asking about. They'll tell the number of students who have attended a session and the date. And then this is online in a password-protected site on our website so that only the TAs and the faculty can look at it. So, for instance, one of the TAs had said, you know, the students are still having conceptual questions on the differences between the central limit theorem and bootstrap approaches. So this allows the faculty to peruse this. The next day at lecture, we can try to begin by reviewing on this topic to, you know, differentiate between these two. So it's a secret place where everyone posts. The students don't know we're doing this. They don't have access to it. But we're able to then share information in between these meetings that we have of the full TA group. So the TA log we found is an important resource for sharing information. The other activity that we have that's especially important for this large course is something we call a Biostatistics TA Training Day. And this has been an annual event since 2003. It started with one of our Biostat graduate students, Felicity Boyd Enders, who's now at Mayo Clinic, and a faculty member, Dana Schleicher, from the school. But it's a Saturday of activities that are led by the student graduate students, Biostat graduate students. So it's not led by the faculty, it's led by the senior graduate students. And so they're teaching the TAs different practices. We require it for all second year students, but it's open to all years, and it's open to non-departmental students who serve as TAs for biostatistics courses. And so what does this day look like? It's a day in which there are, as I said, it's led by students. There are usually a few faculty there. I usually go there as well. But we are there in the background, sort of like flies on the wall. We don't really participate unless questions are directed to us. But it's led by students who welcome, and then there are introductions. It starts with a student skit of bad practices, which, you know, usually is humorous to a degree, and then it's followed by a student skit of good practices. The senior students also give presentations on their perceptions of the roles of good TAs and practices. And then the groups break into small discussion groups to try to remember back in their past what they would consider to be good and bad attributes, or possibly indifferent attributes, and then they get together and share these. And it usually ends with a role playing in which students are given a question or a situation, and they're asked to show this to demonstrate how they would behave. So I'll just go through one example very quickly, and it basically is a bad TA skit. So it starts with the TA saying to the student, "Hey," and the student says, "Is it 2 o'clock yet? It drives me crazy when the TAs show up late. I have another class to get to." And the TA says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm the TA." And then the student says, "Okay, you know, we went through this example in class," and basically, finally, the TA says, "All you need to do is apply the equation," stands to the back of the student with, you know, their back to the student at the board, saying, "Just use this equation." And then the student says, "What is Q?" And they follow it with a good TA skit, in which the TA actually says, "Hi, I'm the TA. I'm here to, you know, answer any questions you might have," and then actually try to work through a conceptual question with an example with a student. So this is usually the icebreaker for this TA training day. And then the students follow this in terms of giving presentations with respect to knowing what the different roles and responsibilities are for different types of classes, and we know that the type of class as well as the size of class, whether it's an introductory class or a more senior class, influences the TA's roles and responsibilities. They review the importance of students knowing the material, which is a given, but they stress that. They handle things like this, email etiquette. You know, and whether they need to continue talking with students as they're wandering down the hall trying to get to their next class and the students are trailing behind them. So they talk about strategies of how to disengage and present other opportunities and handle difficult situations, but as well being aware of cultural and language sensitivities. And this is something that I think has increased over the years with respect to being sensitive in this way. And so some of their common themes are: be prepared, be enthusiastic, don't try to do everything at once, Don't be intimidated. Control your own life, meaning you know when to say no. But you know, above all, try to enjoy this process. So I'll share with you what some of the TAs who attended the training session gave with respect to feedback and what they liked about it. So I think this is telling. It says here, this was a way in a very friendly environment because it was put on by the senior graduate students themselves. It was a friendly environment in which they could see that there were aspects that were very relevant to their TA experience. They liked that it was run by students. They liked to see how students could deal with unpredictable situations and also what senior students thought were good practices. And they thought this was a great way in which, you know, to clarify their responsibilities, what they should do and what they shouldn't do. Because I'm afraid as faculty, we don't always have those discussions about what, you know, what are tricks of the trade and what are good and bad practices. And of course, it always helps to have some food, especially if it's a day-long session on Saturday. So the other example, my second example, is one that's an online course that I co-instruct, and it is a course that satisfies the EPI requirement, actually, for MPH students at Johns Hopkins. And our online course consists of asynchronous course components, and so that word asynchronous means students can go online and they can do this at any time. They can review lecture slides and audio recordings. They can work on exercises, including with a group. So we have wiki exercises in which students build up on, with a wiki tool, their group responses. At any time of the day or night, they can look at review questions. They do homework on their own at any point. And then there's a bulletin board for posting questions that is answered by the faculty and TAs. And this can be done at any point in time. Our synchronous components, though, are live talks, which are held in a studio at a particular time of the day, and our faculty and students are there. These are archived for use by students later on. But in addition to the live talks, we have optional TA office hours. So for this online course, then, we're aiming to emulate what the optional TA office hours are on site. So our teaching assistants participate in the live talk sessions. And they're in the studio with the faculty talking to students around the world at the same point in time. They answer the student questions on this bulletin board. They do as you would expect. They review and grade homework, including the wiki exercises. But the novel part is that they hold their own TA office hours through online sessions. So the unique, and here's just an example of what we look like when we're in the live talk studio. So this is Sukhan Kanchanarak, who is a faculty member in EPI, also the head of distance education at Hopkins. We've been co-instructors of this course since 1997, and then our two teaching assistants are here. But what we feel has been a unique way that's helped us in this course is that we have something we call the TA succession model. And so instead of having different TAs every year, we actually recruit teaching assistants to be with us for multiple years. You know, so we actually, when we interview them, we talk about this commitment. And we've been successful. So we try to maintain the same TAs from year to year. Sometimes they've been with us 3, even 4 years. And they're not always at the same point in their, you know, their academic trajectory. So we try to pair a new TA with a senior TA who's experienced and already serving as an online TA. And then the senior TA, as well as us, the faculty can provide training and mentoring of that junior TA. And so I think because of this succession model, we're able to have our senior TAs really take on added responsibilities above what a TA would take if they were only with us for that, you know, that term or semester. So those are the two examples that I wanted to share. I also wanted to indicate that what I feel is really important is that students are acknowledged for teaching just as much as they're acknowledged for their research. And so we've tried to make strides in our school for that. We have, as many of you do as well, have student assemblies with school awards for faculty and teaching assistants and staff. These are awards that are voted on by the students. But some of the departments, in the biostatistics department, for example, has decided to have departmental awards for student teaching in addition to the award that we used to give just for their research and high-quality dissertation work. So these are awards that are nominated by the faculty, voted on by the faculty. And then we actually also try to highlight that for good student teachers, there are outside teaching opportunities. And so some of our faculty have given short courses and workshops that have either been at other institutions or for pharmaceutical corporations, et cetera. And as well, some of us have affiliations with universities that are outside of Baltimore, but also outside of the U.S. So we've had longtime relationships both in Armenia and Finland, and our student, our senior graduate students have gone to teach in these venues. So, you know, recognizing and highlighting the importance of teaching for TAs has been important to us. And then just in terms of a few comments, there was one student in biostatistics last year who won both the student-nominated award and the faculty-nominated award at the same time. So here are the adjectives. He was amazing. He's thorough. He explained things in a simple and direct manner. He made everything clear. He was awesome. Tried to gauge the labs, go quick through what people understand, and slow through the more difficult subjects. So this dual award sort of cemented our thoughts as faculty on his endeavors. And then lastly, a few other things that are available at Hopkins. We do have one course. It's only one course, and I'd be interested in hearing what others of you have on teaching at the university level. And this is open to students as well as junior faculty. It aims to actually, in a formal way, instruct with respect to course planning and development, lecture planning and delivering, evaluating students, and encouraging, importantly, students to articulate their educational philosophy. So I think many of us teach, but we don't necessarily think of the philosophy by which we teach. And this course is an 8-week, one-term course in which it aims to identify characteristics, good characteristics of good teachers. And the evaluation is based on some papers, but a final project in which the students actually deliver a lecture in their field of interest. This was actually a course that was started by Barbara Kerbo when she was at Hopkins. She's now at Florida and has been taken over by Ann Riley. So my thanks to them. So it's novel. It's only one course that's offered in one department, open to students throughout the school, but only one 8-week term. And I would be remiss to not say that our distance education center, which is called the Center for Teaching and Learning with Technology, has a number of different resources for TAs as well as teachers, and they range from creating course objectives, planning syllabi, managing the course by encouraging participation, providing feedback, etc. So we have this website. I'm going to skip a slide and come back to it because by a perusal of websites, I found that a number of institutions have some great resources, and you may have ones to add as well. But this one is showing University of North Carolina in their Department of Epidemiology has what they call TA Central, Information for Teaching Assistants. And they have things from letters of agreement for being a TA through awards that they give. I found at Harvard there's an office under the Office for Educational Programs, responsibilities and duties of teaching assistants are articulated. Especially they have the Derek Bach Center for Teaching and Learning, so they have some course development as well as feedback tools here. Emory has something called TATO, Teaching Assistant Training and Teaching Opportunities, which allows a student to balance their education as a scholar in addition to their development as a teacher. And lastly, one at UCLA, the Office of Instructional Development, has a whole website on working with teaching assistants and has a TA handbook, best policies, and teaching practice. So I think that these are fantastic websites. I think it's important for all of us to know about them and to use them as resources. I'm just going to say in summary that what we know is that, you know, it's critical for us to prepare future public health teachers. How we do that is really dependent on how we train and motivate and prepare teaching assistants to fall into those roles when they're at academic institutions. I think it requires that we try to optimize the training and mentoring that goes along with this, that they have sufficient and varied experience in different ways, that they have role models, both in the form of faculty as well as senior teaching assistants, and that we all collectively emphasize the value of both what I will call the science and the art of teaching, while those students are graduate students, and that it has the recognition and value that their research has as well. So this is where I am going to end, and I'd like to, we'll take questions at the end.
So hi, I'm Kay Bartholomew, and it would be just fine if you ask questions even during. We're a bit more, I would classify us as more novices in this. Some of what I'm going to tell you, we started just this year, so we have only the kinds of evaluations that are just direct feedback from our students. But I'm also going to talk about two initiatives, one having to do with TA training and the other having to do with direct involvement of our doctoral students in a course that overlays learning objectives for becoming a teacher with learning objectives for doing health promotion and behavioral science theory. So it's kind of a dual track sort of course. So for the very first year, we offered what our director of the Office of Instructional Development called the TA Boot Camp. And one of the reasons for doing this was was really as a overall educational improvement experience. So it was really having the energy of TAs and faculty going in to the course. So really beginning to help faculty see TAs as more co-instructors, people who can have two-way communication with the faculty member, really developing TAs' full potential, of course, decreasing student complaints about performance, developing clear guidelines on what's expected from TAs, and developing teaching skills in the next generation of public health faculty. Our instructional development director, Caroline, started with the needs assessment among students, faculty, administration, and TAs, looking at what other people did. And then she went to visit all of our division chairs. We call them directors, but departmental chairs, and curriculum coordinators to look at sort of a proposed program, so to really develop buy-in and say what they would change about the program, so really do an adaptation of the program. And then she got them to require boot camp for all active and aspiring TAs. And actually, she got almost all TAs to come. So the learning objectives for the boot camp were to begin to be able to apply basic teaching knowledge and skills to really help faculty teach courses, to support the implementation of best practices in course design, to effectively use instructional technology, manage and solve problems in the learning management system, which I don't know about you guys, but that we have every single day, learning management, Blackboard problems, and have effective communication skills with students. Also to really foster better learning environments, to develop and be able to develop and implement their own lecture or other one-time teaching learning experience, to demonstrate effective presentation skills, and to begin to work on written and oral language skills for teaching and other purposes. So that was a lot of learning objectives for one day. And so she had a very intensive one-day boot camp, and then it's followed. So this is teaching assistants from all divisions. This is a photo from the boot camp. She now is following that with monthly one-hour meetings for the TAs by division. So she got them all together and sought to develop really a cohort of all these students who are participating in our teaching programs. And then she meets with them by their division to try to deal more directly with the issues that come up in specific divisions. And she came in the other day and she said, I meant for the division faculty to give me issues to deal with in these monthly sessions, and they're just not. So I don't get feedback from them. And I said, well, so turn it around. So ask the TAs to give you issues, which of course they're already doing, and then feed those issues back to the faculty. So the TAs in the Division of Management and Policy are saying that, and so you might want to come to this or that session. These are the topics, and our dean, she very cleverly, of course, had our dean come and talk to the TA boot camp, and the dean happened to arrive when the students were throwing things to one another. But of course, the energy felt much more like throwing small rubber balls at one another, but they were having a really good time, so the dean was very excited by the energy in the room. But in the middle of boot camp, I was on the elevator with the faculty member, and she said, so what are you teaching in the little boot camp? And I said, And before I could answer, she said, I guess you're just teaching them how to manage Blackboard. And I said, no. Caroline is teaching them how to teach. And the faculty member literally backed up two steps and said, but that's a faculty role. And I said, yes, but what could be better than having another person in your classroom actually paying attention to, issues of instruction? I mean, because we talk about, at least in our institution, research all the time. I mean, we're in teams doing research, but even if we're in teams doing teaching, I would say that we don't as often talk about issues of instruction and best practices. So we really meant to, take a big elevation up in terms of how the TAs see their roles. And none of us could actually make the one-minute video work by clicking on this page. But maybe I should just click now and just see what happens. No, nothing. It's just a short video that really does show the phenomenal energy in the room. Really a very mixed group. You see Caroline, who's the Director of Instructional Development, who's just finishing up her doctoral program in instruction, and she's sitting on the desk up front, and she says, in a year or two, some of you are going to be teaching, so this is just a great time today, right now, for you to, become a co-teacher with your faculty. And almost everyone came. I mean, she had just a couple of people who sort of like, I miss boot camp. And then she has really good attendance at the monthly meetings, and she was telling me that she had one situation where the person went to the administrator for the division and said, I can't come, and Caroline wrote her an email saying, don't forget it's mandatory, and you missed last month too, and you know, blah, blah. And anyway, she showed up. So, and all I've heard from, which is really cool from Associate Dean perspective, is all I've heard from division directors is really good things. I mean, they're really, really excited about this. So the people who actually presented in boot camp were Caroline and then our Associate Dean for Student Affairs, a person who works for one of our research and practice centers whose degree is in educational psychology and instructional design, and then experienced TAs who, as you heard from Marie, lots of talk about TA ship on the ground. And then all of our other trainings are open to TAs, but this is really the first time, and I'll be interested to see how much more traffic we get in these trainings from TAs, because we had pretty much no success really getting, you know, a significant proportion of our TAs to come to the other trainings. But maybe now we will, and it'd be a good indicator for what TA boot camp is doing. So that was our first year of TA boot camp experience, and they so the evaluation was just an immediately after evaluation, so their response to the experience, and it was just uniformly positive. Very, very happy to be there, very happy to be acknowledged in this way, felt like they learned a lot, and plus you could see that energy, you know, in the hallways. You know, you could see them saying it. The second experience that I'm going to talk about is really grew out of our recognition. It really grew out of a curricular issue. So it was our recognition that we didn't have enough doctoral courses. And we didn't know how to stretch the faculty more, really, to do as much vertical integration as we needed to do, and that we needed some sort of innovative ways to be in two places at once, really, and to really have learning objectives for doctoral students that were different than learning objectives for master's students, while perhaps having the same faculty member dealing with each of those cases. So I'm always up for, like, adventure. So I thought, well, you know, what if I did an advanced theories course for incoming doctoral students and layered on top of that teaching learning objectives so that the doctoral students could take a teaching role with the incoming master's students. So every fall semester I get somewhere between 10 and 15 doctoral students, and we get between 50 and 60 incoming MPH, Health Promotion Behavioral Science students. And so the the doctoral students have learning objectives related to teaching. So we work on group management, group leadership, and then they apply these skills running a problem-based learning group for the master's level students. They serve as role models and coaches for sort of socialization into the profession and into graduate school for the master's students. They incorporate the concept of teacher into their personal self-image. So remember, this occurs typically, I mean, some of them take it later, but typically their first semester as a doctoral student. So they develop an initial personal philosophy of teaching. They work with the master's students on mastery of theories and communication regarding theories. They grade papers and provide feedback. And then they work among the doctoral students in a small group to develop, I try not to call this a lecture. It can be a lecture, but it could also be something else, some kind of teaching learning experience on a theory that's not covered in the master's course, typically. So there's a lot going on because those teaching learning objectives are then layered with these advanced theory objectives. So they really have sort of reground themselves in whatever theories they learned in their own master's preparation, and then they choose to explore some theories that are not as typically covered in master's preparation, so sort of an emerging theory, and do a more analytic paper on that theory than they probably have done in their master's program, and then they in a group setting use that theory exploration to develop this teaching experience for the master's students. So we're always doing sort of two things. So how do we do this? So the doctoral students attend the lectures, the master's lectures, and I just never think it hurts to hear something twice, especially when you're going to teach it pretty soon. And then a very important part of the MPH course is case-based learning in problem-based learning groups. And so the doctoral students usually team up. There's usually two doctoral students per master student group. And it's really kind of funny because for those of you who know problem-based learning, the facilitator is not supposed to lead the group. The group is supposed to lead the group, and the facilitator is a resource. So it's this very interesting tension. They're learning to teach, but they're really learning to observe what's going on in these groups as the master students are struggling with the material. And so they're dealing with their own desire to jump up at the board and say, here's the right way to do things. So it's a kind of an interesting first teaching experience where it's really not up at the board talking. It's really saying, what's going on here? And then they meet with me, weekly, anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. I try to not, they've already, of course, done a lecture, and they've been in a lecture, they've been in a PBL group, and now they come for sort of a debriefing, and I try to get them out in about an hour and 15 minutes, unless they really are struggling. And sometimes they really are struggling because they have students who aren't doing well. Sometimes they have groups that aren't doing well. I give them a little bit of instruction on teaching and group management, but generally I am just coaching them. I always feel like I'm not doing enough teaching in here. I'm not making my paycheck. I'm not doing anything. And, of course, I'm not doing the same things they're not doing. You know, I'm just trying not to butt in, which is really hard for me. You know? But I really love to talk, so I'm really struggling with not butting in. But compared to my other classes, I get better evaluations in this course where I'm having to struggle not doing anything. So it's really a funny, you know, we're all learning at the same time. So as the course starts out, a lot more of the class time that they have with me is talking about teaching. These problem-based learning groups, how the students are doing. And then as they start to work in the groups to put together their lecture or other experience, I ask them to first develop an idea about their philosophy of teaching, and then I really have them put together learning objectives and try to figure out really what they want the students to be able to do after they learn about this emerging theory and not just go right for the lecture. Last week we had the photograph, you can see in the back of the room, this is the Houston group, and then in the back of the room, I wonder if the picture's here, are these Austin students. So some of you know we have six campuses, and almost every class in our institution has at least one off-site group, and it just happened that this year I have just as many doctoral students in Austin as I do in Houston. And so the other thing that's going on in the classroom is dealing with technology issues. So the students I always say I'm just simply not talking to pinheads, and neither is anybody else. So you have to use your camera. You have to, you know, see each other. We spent a couple of weeks kind of with the two groups saying, I said, well, you know, do you guys know these people yet? And they're like, oh, you really mean for us to do this, don't you? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I really do, because we're not going to spend a semester talking to each other if we don't know each other. But last week, Charlie, who's in the back of the Austin group, had gotten really frustrated with the writing of his students in the PBL group, and had sort of said, you know, my philosophy of teaching is that you just, you know, like, you just throw it at them and they either get it or they don't get it, and I don't know how, you know. And then he had to come back next week and say, you know, you guys know I didn't mean that, right? And we said, you know, yeah, we didn't figure that you did, but did anyone else develop a philosophy of teaching, and what is it? And so we started talking about that, and then they really came back to the issue of, you know, accommodating this huge wide range of cultures in their groups, and some focus on international students, and of course international students in both groups, Houston and Austin group, and they're like, now wait a minute, you know. And so I just kind of sat back and, you know, I did a little facilitation, but I thought it was really important for them to say, you know, really, what are we doing here, you know, and why are we doing it, and how are we doing it, and what do we do on the days that we're really frustrated? So the feedback that we get from this experience, as I said, is good. They are doing a lot of things at once, but year before last, a student in our debriefing at the end of the semester said, I feel like an adult for the first time ever. You know, taking on the teaching role somehow was quite qualitatively different for her than taking on just the graduate student role. I had a student several years ago who said, I was going to abuse students just like I was abused, and now that's not how I'm acting at all. And I didn't put this on the slide, but at that time, I was standing in for the master's teacher as well. She was on sabbatical, so I was doing both this part and the master's part. And so I was responsible for grading the exams, and this student said, can't you find him one more point? And I'm like, this is you? You know, this is, what is this? And he's like, oh, I'm just completely different. You know, I'm just expected to be this, you know, you have to be really smart to be in graduate school, and what do you think you're doing, and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm this much nicer person. And then sort of a side benefit is these students, too, because they're new doctoral students, are acculturating into a whole different kind of learning experience, and they just appreciate this hour and 15 minutes to be with each other, talking about what they think are really important issues for them as professionals at this level. And of course, I have no evaluation about whether this makes them a better teacher eventually, but certainly probably makes me a better teacher eventually. But I think that may be it to you. So.
Well, thank you very much, Kay. So I think we could just stand here together. And so we're open for questions.
We can turn off my no disclosure.
Okay.
Every time I sign one of these, I wish I were making money.
Is that fine? Okay. Great. So I'm really intrigued by this boot camp. And the fact that you actually got, you know, all the divisions to buy in, and then they sent all of their students to the TA camp. So how did they really handle different disciplines, you know, different disciplinary backgrounds in that setting? Because I can imagine doing it for biostatistics, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure I can think of bringing in the laboratory sciences and, you know, the social sciences.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I look at what you talked about in this, I'm sure that we don't do anywhere near as good a job with the kind of single discipline
detail.
But she really did start out just saying, you know, here's the teaching 101 part, and here's the managing communication part, and your teachers. And under those circumstances, they all had the same the same fear about doing all of this. And now, you know, a big network of people that they see in the halls where they can say, you know, how's it going? So, but I don't know about the more fine-grained schools.
Right, that would have to be, I guess, in separate settings. So we'll open this up.
I have a comment. Having graduated from the University of Texas School of Public Health 20 years ago with a degree in behavioral sciences, I'm extremely jealous.
You can come back anytime.
Really not much in the way of, you know, assistance with teaching in any form, and saying that, you know, this is a substantial improvement, great improvement, and, you know, as I'm sure others, faculties around, you know, we just didn't get the stuff around teaching. And fortunately, at Wright State University, where I am now, on a four-year affiliate with four-year campus, they have a Center for Teaching and Learning where I've been going over and taking courses. So this is a great invention.
So you mentioned the Center for Teaching and Learning, and the ones you showed,
right,
the five, are those open to the public?
Right. So in terms of the, you know, Center for Teaching and Learning, you know, I think most of our schools of public health have some kind of a, you know, teaching resource center or a center for, you know, distance education. So the ones that I provided on the slides are all, you know, publicly available, you know, websites. I know that the one at Hopkins, you know, is also publicly, you know, available. We at Hopkins, so maybe we can have a discussion about some of the things that go on, as a result of both the Center for Teaching and Learning with Technology and through the office of our Associate Dean for Education, we've had other things that have been teaching workshops that have been for faculty. And those have not been, they've not been required. They've been voluntary. You know, they're optional. And so, as you can imagine, it's the same people who always attend them, you know, or give them, you know, or put them on. And it tends to be those who are, you know, the most interested. But I think that, you know, having at this level of the teaching assistant, having it required is, you know, is fantastic.
It'll be fun to see. And I got some ideas from your talk about some things that Caroline can do, but especially trying to figure out whether they close the loop, you know, whether they actually do make suggestions for better practices.
Joel.
I was about to say I was a pessimist, but I'm trying to think of a more positive way. I'm a contingency planner. And Kay spoke a little bit to this. But what happens when things go wrong, when you have a graduate assistant that's just not working? I mean, we have this happen with faculty where we probably vet them more when we hire them than selecting grad assistants. The first one that comes to mind, you know, particularly in biostat, is English as a second language.
Right.
So what sorts of things do you do when things do not work perfectly?
Well, so, you know, what we have, and you're right, things do not work perfectly. So what sorts of things, you know, do you do? So I would say that in terms of biostat, and we do have a, you know, large proportion of our TAs, you know, English is not their native language, we try to employ a buddy system, especially on the days before a problem set is due or before a quiz or before an exam, so that there's not just one TA in the room, there are two TAs. And that way, you know, if... And we do encourage all of the instruction to be in English, but if it should be that there is a, you know, a contingency of Chinese-speaking students who need a Chinese-speaking TA, you know, for those last-minute questions, there, you know, that's available. I would say the other is that, you know, we just try to keep a pulse on things. I think we all do, and that if we find out that a teaching assistant is not quite working out in the role of holding office hours, you know, and this has been rare in my experience, but then we try to put them more on the grading side. And then hope that they'll come to the TA, you know, training, or you know, there can be some one-on-one guidance. But I think by rearranging responsibilities, that's sort of the best we can do. But we do try to, you know, fostering having a team, having the excitement, you know, the energies, keeping that, and you know, somehow channeling all of that, you know, usually leads to, you know, a more positive tone than a negative drudgery tone on the part of the TAs.
And mostly at the division level. So, I mean, I mostly don't hear about TA problems. However, what Caroline has done is systematically open up a channel for dealing with some problems in a group setting where, you know, when she gets feedback that says, you know, maybe even one person's not doing this well, I mean, you can assume that other people may not be doing it perfectly. And so the division directors see an additional resource for handling problems that they don't much want to handle anyway, in trying to do it in an educational way, like, you know, giving feedback in a way that's
encouraging.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we have struggled with, and I wonder if others have too, that, you know, when you have a lot of TAs, and maybe it's mainly a function of the number, and we, you know, try to rotate their responsibilities on different days, sometimes they, you know, if they don't show up, so I think it's when they don't do their duty, either not showing up or they're late in returning, say, grading assignments, you know, that's where I think a more proactive, you know, immediate activity needs to take place. You know, that's from a faculty. It has to be from the faculty level, I think.
At Texas, how many of these courses exist where you have the doctoral and the master
combination?
Just a couple right now. We do have courses, and actually thinking about maybe I should talk about this in my own institution more. But we do have courses where doctoral students and master's students attend the same lecture and then have different objectives, but not courses where the doctoral students are sort of doing a teaching role. And the reason is, you know, we don't have so many courses that use case-based or problem-based learning instruction, and I think that's the hardest barrier for faculty to surmount, because they have to develop this, you know, find or develop those cases. And I think in health promotion behavioral sciences, it's not so easy to do. I mean, it might be slightly easier in EPI. So we don't have so many courses like this. But I think we could. And then the other weird thing is that they think I can only do this because I'm trained in ed psych, which, no. I mean, I sit there and say, well, how did that work? I mean, anybody can say, how did that work? And then they teach each other. And very seldom, that's why I said I sometimes feel like I'm not really doing anything. You know, I'm like a class host. I mean, I might give some advice, but the amount of time that I spend actually saying, well, you know, this might be the best practice way to do that is pretty small. So I guarantee that faculty from any division could do this model.
I just wonder how much experience the doctoral student would need. Is one course enough? Two courses?
I think they need to combine this with other TA opportunities. I think the only thing, or maybe the biggest thing that they get here is just my insistence that they're teachers, that they're responsible for the students in their group, you know, that they have to pay attention to what's going on, and then developing the teaching learning experience, but that's a group effort. But there, those, the other interesting thing is the lectures that the students develop are really interesting. You know, I think the faculty's lectures pale in comparison, because the students are very aggressive about this. I had to laugh. One group said, well, you know, we're doing the this certain theory, and we can't get hold of Dr. So-and-so, the theory developer. And I said, I've been a fan for 20 years, and I've never tried to get hold of Dr. So-and-so.
Right.
What do you want with Dr. So-and-so? And they said, well, we want to talk to her. I said, well, you know, last I knew she was here, whatever. So they found her. She was in Nepal.
Wow.
Right? And they found her in Nepal. And they interviewed her. And so they interviewed her with, okay, so it's 20 years out. What did you learn from developing this theory? And would you add any constructs? Would you subtract any constructs? What was your most fun project that applied it to? And they came back to the lecture, and they had this interview, and they had photographs of her in Nepal, and they found her first doctoral student, and they interviewed her first doctoral student. I'm like, you know what?
That's
you guys
right.
are so far ahead of me that, you know,
right.
amazing.
Yeah, give them that opportunity to, you know, go full steam, and they take it.
Yep.
I think the other, you know, the other sort of interesting thing with TA, you know, training and having meetings with them, and also this model of the doctoral students teaching the masters, is that it turns from the, you know, they versus us mentality, you know, and the teaching assistants, you know, are now part of the they instead of us, and they realize, you know, things look a little bit differently on that other side,
and they do because they had a student who was bullying. There are two people in the group, and the student, they start out and they grade critique papers, and the student was just, I need more points, and I can't imagine why I didn't have more points, and you're just and they're like, whoa, does this happen? And I said, well, you know,
it's a secret.
not so often, but, you know, I have had a student call me a whippersnapper. I had to be much younger for it to happen, but not lately, okay. And so what did you do? And, how might you kind of dig your heels in a little bit? And so, yeah, it's fun.
Let's see, Lisa.
We don't have a formal program like this we've been talking about, so now, after seeing this, I have some great ideas, so thank you for all of that. But we have a core course instructors group that meets monthly, and it strikes me that if I sat down with that group and said, what would you like the TAs to know in some of the categories that you put up, I think that could actually have a positive effect on their teaching when they start to reflect on what do they do themselves, which is sometimes hard to do because as many of us didn't get any training in how to teach, you just get in there and if you do a good job, well, it's good for you, right? And so I think these are great ideas and I really think they could, as we develop it, have a good impact on our faculty.
It's interesting, too, because we didn't really tell faculty exactly what we were teaching, and one of my colleagues has one of these TAs as her TA, and she said, oh, Tiffany did suggest blah, blah, and I said, well, yeah, and we taught them to do that, and she said, you did? Well, in that case, I'm going to ask her what else she has to say.
Right.
You know, so I need to close the loop or help Caroline close the loop myself.
Yeah. No, I think that's so true. You know, having the TAs give feedback to the faculty or having the faculty know what the TAs are supposed to know or do, you know, really does a... So, you know, come full circle. Thank you. Joel.
Growth in baccalaureate education and public health. Do you think your models could be transferred to master's students working with undergraduate students?
Well, so, you know, in terms of transferring the model for, these for graduate students working with graduate students, right, going on to undergraduate. So at Hopkins, we do have a large undergraduate major. And so most of the core and all of the core courses are taught by our School of Public Health faculty with teaching assistants, you know, who are graduate students. So, and we increasingly are seeing the undergraduates taking, you know, more advanced courses in graduate level courses in the School of Public Health. So I do think that it's easily transferable. I also know that there's been a strategy at Hopkins, which has been a great one. They've allowed graduate students, just two a year, to develop a new course for undergraduates. And so it's, you know, there's been ones in environmental health and, you know, others in social and behavioral. So that's allowed, you know, the senior graduate student to come up with their own course, you know, and deliver it to undergraduates.
Another way that we have two, you guys can hear me, right?
What's the recording?
Oh, the recording.
Gosh, I said some things I forgot I was on recording. Oh, okay. We have two programs that are going to be 4+1 programs, one in Austin and one in Brownsville. Mm. And the students in Brownsville, we have to this point been less able than we would have liked to develop a really strong pipeline. So we hope this will help us do that. But the students will still need some kind of coaching up through that, you know, up into the transition. And so I think this is another really good place for students to really feel like teachers. So maybe I can get something going there. And that would be master's and doctoral students. Yeah.
Well, if there are no more questions, then we will close the session so we can, you know, we can turn off the recording. And then maybe we could stay, and if some of you want to stay to just brainstorm a little bit about the Public Health Academy, we could do that. Okay. Well, thank you all for your attention.